Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
All right, our guy Tom set the mood as we welcome you back to hour number four here on WEEI Afternoon, just after 5 o'clock here on the 27th of December. Thanks for being with us here as you start your weekend off right. Dan Ball, Joe Weil taking you up until 6 o'clock. We'll bring you a kickoff with Boomer and Valenti coming up in the 6 o'clock hour, and then some college football bowl action to end your night here on WEEI as well. And we mentioned it very briefly, but because the Patriots are playing tomorrow, what you normally see from the Sunday slate here on the station is happening tomorrow. So football Sunday becomes football Saturday from 9 to 11:30. We'll bring you coverage of Boston College football starting at 11:30. And then the Six Rings postgame show will take place after the end of the Patriots game around 4 o'clock coming up. And I know there's some moving around of the pieces tomorrow. So I believe Mego and Fitzy have you on football Saturday. And then John Lyons and my guy Andy Hart will have you on the Six Rings postgame show. So that's all coming up tomorrow. But we still have another hour's worth of our show here today with the Celtics back on the court. Now, doing something that you don't really ever say with the Celtics team, which is losing three out of their last four. So the rubber hits the road moving forward as December becomes January, because you hit the road for a Western road swing that really takes you through a bit of a gauntlet. So right now you're taking on an Indiana Pacers team that is 15-16 on the season, but they've won a handful of games. They're starting to find their form a bit. And the one thing that you know about Indiana, Joe, this team is going to push the pace. You're not necessarily going to have to deal with the same level of physicality that maybe you certainly dealt with in Orlando, and even to a certain extent you dealt with in Philadelphia. But as we get back to Celtics basketball, knowing the context of how their shooters have gone cold and the defensive rating has slipped, the assists have slipped a little bit, where are you? How do you feel? Are there areas of the game that if you watch this game tonight, you're going to be focused on?
Yeah, I think a couple. And one thing that did stand out about that Christmas Day game was that they didn't have a block or steal in the first half. So
yeah,
you knew something defensively was off in that game against the Philadelphia 76ers. And obviously we know how that ended. It was the Caleb Martin nightmare again at TD Garden. And he just seems like when the lights are brightest against Boston, that guy delivers. Otherwise, he's not that good of a player.
Right.
But
No disrespect, it's just a fact, by the way.
It's the reality.
Like, it's just what the stats say about the player.
He was waived by the Hornets at one point.
Right.
I mean, let's call it spade a spade.
Yeah.
He did get some money from the Sixers.
There you go.
But I think the defensive part of it is something that I'm going to be looking out for. And they have slipped on that end this year, ninth in defensive efficiency compared to second last year. So that's one part of it, and especially coming off the heels of a game against the Sixers where you saw the defensive mistakes, and especially at the end of that game, the fact that Tyrese Maxey, with 1.1 seconds on the shot clock, he was able to slip to the basket and get a late bucket.
Right.
That really put the Sixers in a pretty good position to win that game. So that's one part of it. I think on top of that, the three-point shooting, I have to imagine, Dan, that's going to turn around at some point. They have been in a slump in December, 22nd in the sport in three-point percentage, shooting at 34% from three-point land. And then overall this season, they're 15th in the NBA in terms of three-point field goal percentage. That I imagine, has to change for them just because they do have a lot of good shooters. Peyton Pritchard's been in a slump. We'll see if I haven't seen it quite yet because they were listed as questionable. Kristaps Porzingis and Jrue Holiday right now listed as questionable.
Right.
Obviously, if you can get at least one of those two guys back, you feel better about where this offense can be in a game tonight with the Pacers that you have to keep pace with. But I do look at both situations and say, all right, despite the Celtics losing 3 out of 4, they're 22-8, plus 9, you know, point differential. They're still in a good spot. And I know, like, it's almost, you look at the big shiny object and the Pacers after making it to the Eastern Conference Finals, people looked at this team, and especially like Tyrese Halliburton, and they're like, oh, man, he's going to ascend.
Yeah.
He's been disappointing.
Sure.
And this team is below 500. And sometimes it's like you look at the gold shiny object, and then you look at what you have and don't appreciate what you have. I think these guys are going to turn it around. And I think the comments after that game against Christmas, or on Christmas, against the Sixers, told me they're going to start taking things maybe a little bit more seriously, even though it's the regular season. And they're going to figure out a way to get back to being the full-blown, you know, target on the back on their backs team that they should be.
I think you're right. You know, you have so many professionals in this locker room. You're the depth of not only basketball talent but seemingly basketball intellect in this organization at this point. And that goes from Brad Stevens down to Mazzulla, who seems to be quite the savant, and then on down through the roster, really knows no bounds. So I think there's a lot of credence to that point that you make, where they recognize that maybe whatever the recipe that was last year and whatever the recipe was at the beginning of the year, and I would point specifically to the barrage, that the heavy quantity, which would then lead to heavy quantity of threes, maybe that's not working quite as well now as it has in the past year plus. And maybe it's a temporary tweak. Maybe it's more of a permanent tweak. And I believe I talked about this with John Lyons a couple days ago when we were in for Jones and Keefe, about how you have shooters that are good at a lot of different things. You know, Jason Tatum can take that mid-range jumper at a level that few can in the league, but pretty much across the board, that's Tatum and Brown, that's Al Horford, who has now developed himself into a three-point shooter. You have guys that are just tasked with, listen, get the three ball off. Get it for whatever is going on in your game, get the three ball off, and eventually, numerically, we'll make up for whatever we lose in the misses with the makes, and we'll still end up scoring points. But to your point about three-point shooting as a philosophy, when Pritchard goes cold and when, by extension, you're just not converting at that same level, okay, well, is there a tweak? Are they currently actively workshopping? Well, then how else can we beat teams if maybe the three ball hasn't been as successful in recent weeks as it was in the last year plus? That's what I wonder about.
Yeah, and I think it's a fair concern. And I think with Joe Mazzulla, just at, you know, with him at the helm, they're not going to change. And I actually appreciate that part of it, because he's like, hey, listen, my style works. I know everybody talks about the three-point shot and the concerns with it. But that being said, it works for this group with the way that Brad Stevens has constructed this team. We were talking a little bit about this yesterday with Cooper, like the Kristaps Porzingis part of it.
Yeah.
I do wonder when his continued absence, because I know we all talk about, okay, just like bubble wrap this guy into the playoffs. And
right.
I understand that, right? You just want him when it matters most. But he's supposed to be a key part of your rotation.
Yeah.
At what point, with the Miles and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, they're obviously super young guys still. Not super young, but they're young guys. They're in their prime guys.
For what they've accomplished, yeah, they are very young.
Yeah, exactly. But they are coming up, like at least for Tatum, you have the Olympics. I know he didn't play a lot, but you know, like the Olympics experience coming off the finals, they make deep runs every year. At what point does the wear and tear of the roster, if Porzingis is a guy that continues to be out, what point does that actually start to affect the roster?
Right.
I mean, I don't know how much of a concern that is because Tatum and Brown, they post, and that's why you appreciate them so much compared to other guys around the league. When load management is such an issue, these guys want to play, and if they're able to go, they will go. But Al Horford's getting older. I mean, each and every year, at some point, you do worry about his age. And with the way the NBA is currently constructed with the CBA and having to, you know, you pay two guys a lot of money, and obviously the Celtics are deep into the tax, that their roster's a little bit different than others who don't want to go into that second apron. I just wonder when all the miles start to pile up and when this team does possibly get to a point where, all right, the play continues to be concerning. And that's where, obviously, when you're in this market, you always get, I mean, we ratchet it up, right?
Yeah, like, of course.
It's different than playing anywhere else.
Yeah.
But I think tonight, if they can play well defensively against the Pacers team that is more known for its offense and can execute offensively, because the Pacers are not good defensively.
Right.
That might quell some people's concerns. And I think, not to say like today's like a must-win game, but after the comments on Christmas Day where all the players that spoke pretty much said, and even Joe Mazzulla is like, I mean, they all basically said, paraphrasing obviously, but like, we need to be better.
Yeah.
And we have to, we need to be better. This is a time to kind of quell that and reestablish themselves, get them back on the track of competing with the Cavs for that top spot in the Eastern Conference.
You know, the Porzingis conversation is going to be one just until it's not. As many times as he checks in, then he checks out, then he needs to miss a couple of games, then he's back, now it's this, now it's that. That's going to continue to be a conversation. And one I wasn't quite as in tune with, but was mentioned by Chris Forsberg in his piece on NBC Sports Boston, is Sam Hauser, who is dealing with back issues right now. And he mentions, more concerning, when Hauser has been available, he struggled to be impactful. He played 13 minutes against the 76ers and didn't register a point. Now, you know, numerically speaking, across a whole season, it's not drastic. He jumped up from 6.4 points a game to 9 last season. Now this year he's down to 7.9. But you have seen a general downtick in some of his production. The defensive rebounding is down. Overall rebounding is down a little bit. 3-point percentage is down. Shooting percentage is down. So there are a couple nagging bumps and bruises that he mentions, on top of the fact that you are just straight up dealing with age for Al Horford, which is not an injury, but it affects us all, and it renders you less useful and less effective over an 82 game season. So all of a sudden you go from a bench where you can go 10, 11 deep or whatever it is, to now I don't have Porzingis for a handful of games. Now Sam Hauser's playing at limited capacity. Now I definitely have to watch the minutes and manage the load of Al Horford. And if you couple that with now what Drew Holiday's dealing with and the fact that Peyton Pritchard is quieted off, all of a sudden this team that can run 9, 10, 11 guys deep on their bench, now you're talking about 7 or 8 at best, and some of those guys are going through a cold streak. So as much of the depth is a luxury for the Boston Celtics right now, that depth is being challenged at what I would say is a level, injury-wise, that we hadn't seen to this point in the season last year. It's they were, by and large, a pretty healthy group last year.
That's such a big point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was Porzingis. Like, Porzingis with the health, that's where you got concerned. Everybody else, for the most part, the key guys were healthy.
Right.
And you just don't get that luck every year.
No.
That's why it's so hard to win in the NBA. And especially with the way it's set up, where it seems like the league is purposely trying to make sure that there are no dynasties with the way the CBA is set up, in the second apron and all that. And that's a big factor as it's related to this team trying to do what no Celtics team has done since the Bill Russell era and went back to back. You just need so many things to break your way. And Dan, I think what's working against the Celtics a little bit right now, and again, I think if they can put on a good performance tonight in front of the home fans, people will be feeling much differently about it.
Right.
But what's working against the Celtics this year compared to last year is that luck factor, the health of this team. It's being tested a little bit right now in a way that maybe not as quite, it wasn't quite the case last year. On top of that, I just think the road to the finals is going to be harder for the Celtics. Everything broke their way. That doesn't diminish the title at all because
right. You
look at what they accomplished last year. Historically, this was a great team that they put on the court last year.
It was an easier road, and by extension, they dominated on that road. So they did what they had to do.
They did what they had to do, but I think if you look at the East last year, I think the team that Celtics fans probably felt the most concerned about was the Knicks.
Yep.
And they were so injured in that Eastern Conference semifinals matchup against the Pacers. That's why the Pacers were able to make it into the Eastern Conference Finals.
Right.
This year, you look at the Cavs. I think this Knicks team is a lot better. I don't think the Bucks could beat the Celtics, but they do have Giannis, and I guess you can't completely rule that out, and they're looking a lot better. So the road is going to be a lot harder. I just think there are a lot more factors, and this is what makes it so difficult to go back-to-back in this league, and it makes it so fascinating to see where this team goes, because this was the team of the year in Boston. I think that's without a doubt.
Yeah.
And especially in the market right now where the three other teams are at. Bruins have turned things around. The Red Sox, we still feel like they're like a move away, and the Patriots are the Patriots right now.
right. 617-779-7937. Mike is calling from my home state of Connecticut. Mike, how you doing, man?
Good evening, gentlemen. Happy New Year to everybody. Happy holidays.
Hey, Happy New Year. How you doing?
Thank you, Mike.
Hey, look, I find the even like a little bit of worry from Celtics fans comical, because we all knew that it wasn't going to be the steamroll that we had last year. Last year was the perfect storm. Everything fell into place for us. It was just one of those, like, you're not going to see a season like that again for a long time from anybody, in my opinion. It's just, but like I said to the guy that answered the phone, it's like it almost looks like when you watch these games, and I think it's funny that people overreact, it looks like Joe Mazzulla was actually trying new things out there in these games. Like, he's treating some of these games like a practice. And I don't know if Joe Mazzulla is as concerned about the wins and losses in the regular season as he is about trying to find, you know, certain matchups that work.
Right.
Whether or not some of the bench guys can come in and contribute, if he can trust them, you know, God forbid something happens to one of the regulars at the end of the season. So, like, when you see Drew Peterson playing meaningful minutes in some of these games, when you're seeing Jordan Walsh come out here and start to play meaningful minutes, these aren't guys that you're really going to rely on in the playoffs. So, like, you could tell Joe's just trying to play the mad scientist. He's trying to experiment with things. I'm not worried about it, because it doesn't matter if it was the 1, the 2, the 3 seed, whatever it is, whatever seed it is we get, we're going to win the East no matter what. I'm not worried about anybody in the East. Like, we're not going to win every single game. The people that freak out because we're not going 72-10 or 82-0, it's funny to me. I think, step back off the ledge, we're going to win the East. And, I mean, I don't know if it's a bold prediction, but I think we're going to go back-to-back, because I don't see anybody out West that can beat us in a 7-game series either. It's just people need to kind of, you know, relax, like Aaron Rodgers would say.
There you go. R-E-L-A-X. Mike, thank you for the call. We certainly appreciate it. And I think that's important context to remember.
The Celtics have first world problems.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there is a lot of credence to the point that he makes about they are figuring out some stuff on the fly. And I think a lot of that also goes into the injury conversation, where there have been different rotations. So you do have the luxury, when you're as good as they are, to who is going to be the next Peyton Pritchard, who is going to be the next, you know, the next Sam Hauser, the guy that comes up in your system that's able to supplement an injury to Porzingis or an injury to Drew Holiday or Al Horford aging out or something like that. So there is a lot of moving parts that are happening, and it's a point that's well taken from Mike, that this isn't as easy of a cakewalk of a season as Celtics fans are coming off of a year ago. So important context all around as the Celtics get ready to take on the Indiana Pacers. We're up against a break. We'll take it here as we move our way through hour number 4 here on WEEI Afternoons. Before we get to our commercial break, one more time, here's Joe with what's trending. It's WEEI Afternoons. Dan Ball, Joe Weil in for the guys. Andy Harp back on Monday as he and John Lyons, as we, Stiz and I just got words. So Andy Harp and John Lyons will be on location at Gillette for WEEI Afternoons Patriots Monday on Monday, this very same time slot. And then I believe our good friend Nick Fitzy Stevens is filling in on the midday show as well on Monday. So programming note is Andy is back on Monday. Christian and his broken nose and black eyes and all the kind of stuff that he will be returning with. The guys will be back January 2nd in full form, which is Thursday. So that's what's coming up in this time slot over the next couple of days. One other detail that came from the Josina Anderson report that we talked about off the top of the show had to do with Travis Hunter. An interesting discussion on Heisman winner Travis Hunter is already brewing up north. That includes how Deion Sanders' history could inform Hunter's potential utilization at the next level or not. Feelings on where Hunter lacks in comparisons to the likes of Justin Jefferson and Malik Nabers in terms of wide receiver skills, and some favoring Hunter as a corner versus the longevity you could get out of drafting a top-rated offensive lineman first. I saw a poll that was put out by Fox Sports' Jay Glazer. He put it out a couple of weeks ago where he said that he spoke to 13 NFL executives about Travis Hunter and where they believe he would play as a professional. And off the top of my head, 12 out of 13 said that he would be a corner in the NFL, with all of them recognizing that he does have elite ball skills and acknowledging that there's probably a future as a punt returner, kick returner. In addition, it seemed, at least within the sample size that Jay Glazer spoke to, that the opinion of the league is that when Travis Hunter goes to the NFL, he will end up being a cornerback just based on the skills that he has. But it brings up the conversation, and we had Tom Carroll in here for the first 3 hours. He spoke about his opinion that he would take Travis Hunter number two overall. I wanted to foster the conversation between you guys, am on the other side of it in the team trade down camp, because I think as we've kind of talked about in getting to know each other the last 2 days on this show, this roster, other than Drake May and Christian Gonzalez, basically has a lot of free spaces that you could justify, you could upgrade based on what the incumbent is right now. And as much as I think Travis Hunter has a lot of great skills on both sides of the ball and will probably be a pretty darn good professional, if you can hold a quarterback needy team's feet to the fire and get another first round pick next year, get more draft depth in this year's class, and build out the breadth with which you can bring in young players and draft and develop players at multiple positions, specifically offensive line, That's what I would be trying to do in a world where they get the number two overall pick.
And I think I'm with you on that, because there's just so many holes that this team has, and this is a way that you can help fix that.
Yeah.
And you can also fix your wide receiver room by spending. Obviously, the wide receiver has to choose to come to the Patriots, and as much as we talk about how good Drake May is and how much promise we see with Drake May, who knows if the top flight receivers really care about that at all when they look at this Patriots team that could very well finish 3-14.
Right.
But here's a question I have back for you, Dan. If the Patriots last year had already had Drake May and they had the number three pick, would you have gone for Marvin Harrison Jr., who was dubbed as a generational wide receiver prospect?
Right.
Or would you have traded out of that?
I feel you said with if you already had the quarterback.
Yeah, saying like the Patriots already had Drake May,
yeah,
but you had that pick.
I'm always in the camp of trade back. Especially if there's a team where you can trade back between, say, 3 and 5 picks from where you are, where you're not moving necessarily to the back end of the first round, but you are moving out of 3 down to, say, for example, in this simulation, say that you already have the quarterback and the Giants are still picking at 6, because we saw in Hard Knocks that they were gung-ho about trying to get to 3 and flip spots there. If you already had the quarterback and he was a known quantity, I would be moving back, but in the same vein, last year's draft maybe isn't the best example, because you could still get a Malik Nabers at 6 and get a haul of draft picks in the process.
That's a fair point.
So yeah. I am still, if you have the quarterback, which the Patriots do, and you know that teams around you need a quarterback, and they also have a 5 pick, a 6 pick, a 7 pick, somewhere that still gets you an elite player. You get the pick of the litter from offensive linemen or another corner or whatever else you want to do with that pick. I am team trade down to make a team overpay to draft their quarterback 10 times out of 10 if I get that chance. Maybe it's too conservative. I don't know. Maybe you take Travis Hunter and he's, you know, he's an all-pro as soon as you put him on the roster. I'm looking at everything with this year's draft is what gets the Patriots back to consistently being a playoff team as quickly as possible. And I think either getting multiple draft selections plus another first round pick and either using them on young players or, hey, let's package them together for a wide receiver who can't say, no, I don't want to sign there, who has a contract that has to play with the Patriots. I think there's a way you can weaponize those draft picks to be a better football team come 2025 than if you just take Travis Hunter at two.
And the reason I wanted to ask you about the Marvin Harrison thing is because you just hit on the piece you're talking about with Jay Glazer, where people think this guy is going to be a cornerback instead of a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Whereas Marvin Harrison Jr., I know it hasn't played out the way that people thought, where this guy was going to be the number one wide receiver in his draft class. But the point I was just trying to go with is, like, it was a no-brainer pick if you needed a wide receiver and this guy was still on the board.
Yeah, sure.
Because people are like, this guy these prospects don't come around all that often. Whereas for you know, Travis Hunter, there's still a question of, will he actually, like, will he want to play that position in the NFL? Is that the best position for him? Like,
yeah.
To me, the fact that there are even questions about it, And that's the position of need that you have at wide receiver. That's where I actually might feel more comfortable, like, as you're saying, trade out of it
yeah.
to get more pieces to fill more holes. And I think also getting an offensive lineman that it can be a staple on the line for many years to come, that's so underrated, too. I like, you look at, and it's perfect time to bring up the Chargers and Joe Alt, with despite the fact that there were so many good offensive players, like skill players in this draft, that was a great pick by them to get somebody on the line
right.
to actually help them out, protect Justin Herbert a little bit more, and to provide more stability in the line, which, by the way, they've used to their advantage because they run the ball so often. Like, I think the structure is so much better. And the last thing I want is for Drake May to get hurt. You know, that was the concern going into the season, why Jerod Mayo didn't want to go to him at the beginning of the year. I guess one of a couple. Maybe they didn't want to throw him into the fire right away. But one of the biggest things and biggest talking points was, this line is not good. And the last thing you want to do is throw a guy right at the beginning of the season that's a rookie behind that line that can get him in trouble. So I like the idea of building on the line and maybe getting another piece, like, you know, with that extra pick to get a wide receiver that can also help out too.
To further the conversation about the Chargers, who again are in Foxborough this weekend, their offensive line as it stands right now. So Joe Alt, as you talk about, first round pick this year. The left side of their offensive line, they used a 2021 first round pick on Rashawn Slater as their left tackle, and a 2022 first-round pick on Zion Johnson, who's their left guard. So they went offensive line, offensive line, offensive line, build in the trenches, build the depth down the middle to add into their 2020 first overall pick, Justin Herbert. And now, as an offense and as a ground-and-pound, 3 yards in a cloud of dust team that can also air the ball out, they have a very dynamic but very secure, very tough offense that you're now going to have to deal with as a defense here this weekend. So if you get the opportunity to draft and then draft again and then draft again at the offensive line and build up that group in front of, in this case, Drake May, and in the Chargers case, in front of Justin Herbert, I like that. I really do, because I think that there are other ways that you can address the wide receiver position and other ways you can address the cornerback position other than gambling. Because I know Travis Hunter's an incredible athlete. I know that. But you're gambling that both his ball skills on offense and defense, let's say ball handling, his skills on both sides of the ball.
Yourself.
That's fair, barely. You're gambling that both of those are going to translate from the collegiate level, which, you know, providing coverage at the collegiate level is one thing. Covering NFL level wide receivers is certainly another. You're gambling that both of those are going to transition, where you can get the breadth of picks and build out your roster and build out that depth that I think would fit the Patriots more where they stand right now. But again, I don't think that a lot of fans would fault them for saying, no, we are staying at two and taking Travis Hunter. Even if you and I may agree with it, if they see the elite potential on one side of the ball versus the other and they stay there and they take it, or maybe they don't get the otherworldly offer, the Jared Goff trade-esque offer that maybe you'd want for that number two pick, then all right, stay and take him. And I think fans would also be kind of pumped to have him too.
I have the feeling that do you think Vegas is going to go and make an offer that's super enticing? Because I do.
Yeah, I think that there's I was about to just pull up the list of teams and kind of do a mental exercise as you were talking, because I mean there are no shortage of teams. Assuming the Giants get the number one overall pick, the Raiders are certainly in the market for a quarterback right now. I think there's a conversation to be had in New Orleans. I think there's a conversation to be had. The Vikings, I think you should be set with McCarthy, but. We talked about the Giants beforehand. They're at Jacksonville. I don't know where they sit right now on Trevor Lawrence. Tennessee now with Will definitely. Levis. That's certainly a team that should be making an offer. And why wouldn't the New York Jets be lining up to make an offer as well? As apparently now there's all of a sudden a 10 to 20% chance that Rodgers is going to be returning. So I really do think you can incite a bidding war if you get that number two overall pick, assuming that it seems all but certain, as long as the Giants don't win, they're going to take Shadur. So whoever thinks Cam Ward is worth another first-round pick, a second round this year, da-da-da-da-da, all that, you should be able to incite a bidding war and drive that price up. And I think that's a really valuable thing.
And I think there is going to be a team out there that does believe Cam Ward is the guy.
Yeah.
Because that's just how it goes in these drafts. I think the one year that it really felt like nobody was quite interested in drafting quarterbacks. It was a couple years ago. It was the Kenny Pickett draft.
Yeah.
Where the fact that the Steelers got him, I think it was the 20th pick overall, that he fell down to that point. But I think it's going to be different this year with how many quarterback needy teams that are truly out there, like a Vegas, like a Tennessee. And I think that the Patriots could get a pretty good bundle of picks to ultimately help build this roster out a little bit better. I wonder what the fan base does think on that, because the Travis Hunter part of it, like the name brand of it too, just to have him in the building.
Yeah.
Like that does create excitement around the Patriots.
It's true.
Heisman winner, obviously. But is it the right thing to do? Maybe it is. Maybe we're wrong. But I actually like the idea more of building out the line, which is so important in football, and then maybe with one of those picks that you get by trading out, you get a wide receiver, or you just go out and spend to get one.
From the 207, we need a center is followed by 5 exclamation points. The text that we received followed by we need a center to grow with May, which I think is a fair point that you can make. Again, what will the Patriots do at number two overall, assuming that they're going to be there? It's a tough task this weekend for sure as they take on the Los Angeles Chargers. Want to share a bit of news that just broke a few moments ago. Greg Gumbel, longtime sportscaster who called for the NFL on CBS for decades and served as the studio's host during the NCAA tournament, has reportedly passed away, as written by Emmy-winning producer Dan Forer on Facebook on Friday. Gumbel was 78 years of age. He missed last year's NCAA tournament with what was described as family health issues, and unfortunately, he's passed away. So you and I are both broadcasters on the younger side. So when you talk about versatility of broadcast talent, guys that are able to pretty much deliver no matter what situation you put them in, no matter what sport you put them with as well. Greg Gumbel was certainly somebody that lived up to that standard. So obviously the best to the Gumbel family, but the sports world and the broadcasting world lost a titan today.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, we grew up watching him, and I think the dual role that he could do as being a play-by-play guy and also as a host, it was... Yeah, he's one of the greats.
Yeah.
The Gumbel family. I mean,
I watched
Real Sports growing up a lot.
Yeah.
With his brother, too. So, this is a tough loss. A tough sports year loss, too. I mean, even in recent days with, like, Ricky Henderson.
Yeah,
too,
no question.
That was a really tough one. And with Greg Gumbel, I mean, that's sad news.
Yeah, no question. So our best to the Gumbel family and the sports world in general as we grieve the loss of Greg Gumbel. Okay, we're up against a break. We'll take it here. We return and wrap things up with Odds and Ends. Odds and Ends brought to you by Cars for Kids, the easiest way to get rid of your old car. Donate today and your car can be picked up tomorrow. Donate now at carsforkids.com. That's cars with a K. Back here on WEEI Afternoons, the Sacramento Kings are today's team of the day, or slimy team of the day. They fired head coach Mike Brown, but here's how and when they did it. On Thursday night, the Kings, who are 13-18, coughed up a one-point loss to the 14-17 Detroit Pistons on a four-point play in the game's final seconds. According to ABC10's Matt George, Brown was fired after running practice and meeting with the media just before the team boarded a flight to Los Angeles for its matchup with the Lakers on Saturday night. Brown told reporters earlier today, "I've been through a lot in this business. I've been through way more good times than bad times, but I've been through some bad times. I've been fortunate, blessed to be around great players and great coaches. And the crazy part about it is I've been around coaches that have won titles, and they have a lot of smoke they've got to face when their little stretch of adversity is not great." 2023 Coach of the Year, Mike Brown, runs practice, meets with the media, tells everybody how grateful he is, and then, see ya, pal, you're gone.
It's a cruel world out there, Dan.
Man.
Right around the holidays, too.
That's right. I always hate when I see the, but to your point, when you see the firings that happen around Christmas time and right before it, it's just like, man, if you're going to do it, you don't want anybody to be fired in any capacity, but if you're going to do it, give me a couple weeks.
At least this time it was without the Kobe stare before. Remember when he was with the Lakers and Kobe it was like he walked by and Kobe just gave him that death stare.
Like he vaporized his job right there with his eyes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, rough go for Mike Brown. But, I mean, he signed a three-year extension that was supposed to take him through 26-27. So at very best, he'll get another job. And I would imagine he would. But at very worst, he's going to be paid to sit on either his couch or sit on a panel on TNT or ESPN or something and do a little bit of that. But that is Odds and Ends for today. And that is our show for today and this week. So thank you so much for spending some time with us here on this Friday. Have a wonderful weekend. Joe, we weren't planning on seeing each other for a second time, but we did. It was a pleasure. Have yourself a wonderful weekend, man.
Thank you so much, Dan. Great to pinch hit. Be with you again. You as well. Have an awesome weekend, and hope everybody has a happy new year, too.
Absolutely. Yes, that's right. Tom, great job, by the way, man, and Jason Tatum, best player of all time in the history of ever.
I'm not going that far just yet.
Okay, fair enough. We'll wait for that on Monday. But in the meantime, don't forget, again, Andy is with John Lyons in Foxborough for Patriots Monday on WEEI Afternoons, and that'll lead you into the new year. And then the guys are back in full on Thursday, January 2nd. Thanks for spending your Friday with us. Kickoff with Boomer and Valenti is on the way next before some college football action to take you through the night here on WEEI. Have a great weekend. Goodbye.